This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And off we go into hour number four. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The Rob Brown Show is on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Robin the Great One Lonzo with you on an Upstate Wednesday morning. Looks like the fog that shrouded the area has begun to burn off by and large, which is good news because it was gross coming in this morning, like real bad coming in this morning. So looks like we're in a little bit better spot now than we were earlier this AM. Still be careful.
Yeah, I feel pretty bad. Got my first possum.
Oh, did you now?
Yeah, I did.
Oops.
I'm guessing he or she died. I don't know, but it was straight on. Oh, and it was boom.
Oh, no.
Yeah, there was no. My car's fine, though, in case anyone was wondering. But tires are really wide, so, I mean, I think it was square in the middle of, I thought it was roadkill, yep. And I was trying to avoid it, so I swerved a little, and so did it. So, bad choice, possum. Bad choice.
Yeah. Possum v. car, possum's gonna lose most of the time. I hate that. I popped a squirrel not too long ago. And I got to tell you, I hunt, I fish, you know? Me and Xavier Leggett, we're basically boys. I felt real bad for that squirrel, dude. It kind of ruined my day a little bit, right?
Yeah, I borderline hate possums because they're freaky. But I didn't want to kill it, you know? He did now, though, probably.
Oh, he definitely did.
So he may have just showed me the whole flock and walked away.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, probably not. All right, we got a lot of stuff we need to get into here on the radio program. Texter said, go Bits, hit that goal horn. Never too much goal horn, Selly. Never too much. Texter said, Bonetti is no Don Cherry. Yeah, you know who's Don Cherry? Literally Don Cherry and nobody else. Don Cherry's goated. I mean, just top-notch dude. Texter said, can we talk about the Hornets PS5 situation? Did you see this? This was pretty gross. So apparently there was a story going around, the Charlotte Hornets threw a, Christmas thing at their game the other night. And at the game, they had, Hugo, the Hornet mascot, walk out to midcourt. And they took letters from fans requesting, you know, different gifts or whatever, kids. And one of the kids requested a PlayStation 5. The Hornets brought this kid out to midcourt, sat him with Hugo the Hornet, who was wearing a Santa outfit, and gave him a PS5. And then, apparently, when they got him off the court, Zoe, they took the PS5 back and gave him a jersey as a gift instead.
Wow.
That's a real bad look, dude. Real bad look. The Hornets put out a statement that said, during last night's game, there was an on-court skit that missed the mark. The skit included bad decision-making and poor communication. Simply put, we turned the ball over and we apologize. We have reached out to the family and are committed to not only making it right, but to exceeding expectations. We will be providing the fan with the PS5 that he should have taken home last night, along with a VIP experience to a future game. Our goal is and will remain to elevate the guest experience for every person that enters the Spectrum Center and to show our fans how much we appreciate appreciate their relentless support.
Yo, kid, take the system, but don't go back to the to that place.
Yeah, bro.
I mean,
I'd take that PS5 and they'd be like, and also I'm a Hawks guy now. I'm also a big Pelly's guy now. That's, listen, as somebody who has worked officially in public relations and as somebody who works in an unofficial capacity in public relations as well, this is not how you want to get talked about, man. Like at all. According to a Twitter account, said, you guys want to see a cheap sports organization. In this video, my best friend and his nephew got called onto court for a special segment where they gift the kid a PS5 publicly with cameras off. They took it away and gave him a jersey. Take a bow, Hornets. You crushed the kid. Apparently, and I've watched the video a couple of times, they had the cheerleaders out on the court too. And apparently in the video towards the end, after the after they're walking off, the cheerleaders were seen in the background like, oh, no. Oh, no. What a bad look. What a bad look specifically for a team that was sold last year for $3 billion that you came up off of a $500 console for that look. Oh, that's rough. That's rough. Yeah, I don't even know.
That's one thing Michael Jordan would not have gotten wrong.
Yeah.
He would have gave the kid the PS5.
Yeah. That's a real bad look for an organization that not only, I think, is set up very well for the future. We have talked about this, although they did. I had to tell you, I think the Hornets are in this, you know, if not for bad luck, no luck at all club. They get their official preseason starting five on the floor for the first time together since the beginning of the year, like 3 days ago. And Brandon Miller immediately goes down with an ankle sprain. He's going to be out for a few weeks. Like, this team just can't get anything right on or off the floor. That's a real bad look. I want the Hornets to do well. I like having an NBA team just a couple of hours up the road that I can pop in the car and drive up there. Keegan and I have already been talking. We're going to go up to Hornets when the Lakers come to town in mid-January to go watch LeBron play in what I suspect is the farewell tour. But man, it's kind of hard to justify giving them money right now.
Have you looked at about where the game is as far as how many games in a row they're playing and everything? Because you might be taking a shot of going up there and him not
getting load managed.
Yes,
I mean it's certainly a possibility.
I mean, I don't know if there's a formula to figure that out, but you might want to try to find one.
I mean, look, LeBron's taken 3 games off this year. Like, this is my other problem is we're screaming about load management. LeBron took 3 games off this year and he was actually hurt.
But no, I get all that. But with your luck, this might be the one where he goes, yeah, you know, we're out of the playoffs. And I'm just,
tired. I'm sleepy.
Just, yeah, I gotta rest my ankles.
Yeah, I'm sleepy. I need to use a nap. It's a bad look, man. It's just a bad look. Like, you live in you're in a transplant city. Charlotte is a transplant city, right? Charlotte is very much a city. I was having a conversation with somebody the other day who runs one of the local sports teams. And we got into this conversation about branding, right? And they were like, I don't remember how the conversation started up. It doesn't matter. But we got into a conversation about the concept of branding. And I have said for years, and I believe this about this show, I believe it about sports teams, I've said for a very long time, the single most important thing that a brand can do is be a good representative of the region whose name is across the front of their jersey, right? Like, you have to know the place that you are. You have to know the personality, the demographics, and you've got to represent that well. I was telling this person who runs a local sports team that if you go look at teams that do well specifically in sports where maybe their sport isn't a big background, because I think that's the toughest thing, right? If you can take, and my example of this has always been the Nashville Predators. The Predators started a team in Nashville, Tennessee. Nashville, Tennessee is a classic all-American city, right? You were talking Music City, USA, the home of country music, right? I mean, it is It is a traditional American, Americana southern town. And you bring in hockey, which is, respectfully, because I love hockey, a foreign sport, right? I suspect not a lot of folks that were born in Nashville, Tennessee, grew up around hockey. And so the Predators have found a way to survive. And what the Predators do to survive is what? They are an excellent representation of Nashville, Tennessee. They did not show up and say, hey, Nashville, here's hockey culture, embrace it. They did quite the opposite. They showed up and said, hey, Nashville, Tennessee, where's your culture? We want to embrace that. So if you go to a Predators game, it's a college football tailgate around a hockey stadium, around Bridgestone Arena. If you go to a Predators game and you go early, there are country music concerts taking place on all four corners of the stadium. You walk anywhere you want, you're going to come across some live music from some very talented country artists right around it. Then when you go into the game, they didn't say, hey, if you're here, you're going to eat poutine and drink Labatt Blue. They said, no, we're going to serve up some cold Budweisers and some Nashville hot chicken, right? And then they have country music stars that come out and sing the national anthem, and they put the Tennessee Titans offensive lineman up in the box. I've told the story, I think, a couple of times of my first Predators game. I had a buddy of mine who ran the PR and marketing department for the Predators. And when I was there, when I was working down in Florida, he called me up and he's like, hey, bud, I was going up there for a girl I was dating at the time. Her best friend was getting married. And so we went up there and he was like, hey, I got you. I see you're coming up. I'm going to put you up in a box. We're going to let you have a good time. I was like, great. I showed up, took me on a tour of the stadium, took me back into the locker room, got me a jersey, got me a signed puck, put me up in the president's box. And in the box next to me was the Titans offensive line. And at one point during the game, somebody netted a Hattie, and the Titans offensive line pulled out a dead catfish out of a cooler. One of the linemen held the catfish mouth to mouth, mwah, like he's about to French kiss it. And the other lineman started pouring cold beers into the gills of this catfish. So this guy was chugging beer through a dead catfish. Like, that ain't Nashville. If that ain't country, I don't know what is. Right? Like, they embrace that culture. And I've said for a very long time that if you want to succeed, that's the secret. You embrace the culture of the local community. This is why I've said for a very long time, one of the most impressive teams I've ever seen is the Greenville Triumph. Greenville goes, the Triumph, and all the local teams too, but the Greenville Triumph have gone out of their way to make themselves as visible as possible within the Greenville community so that Greenville knows we're part of this. We're here. We're not asking you guys to adopt soccer culture. We're asking you guys to adopt soccer because we are a part of your culture and we celebrate it. And I think that's fantastic. You want the Hornets to thrive? You want the NBA to thrive? Step number one, my dudes and my dudettes, is to be a better representation of the city you're in. Be a better representation of the culture you're in. This is a real, real, real bad job of that. These are the kinds of things that doom a franchise. Is it that big of a deal? Like, in the grand scheme of things, is this that big of a deal? No. No, it's not. Until it gets picked up by every national outlet and it starts going around, because people love doing nothing more than dumping on people.
This was a good idea.
Who the hell knows?
I mean,
who the hell knows? But it doesn't, like, at the end of the day, this is another one of those times where you look at it and you go, it doesn't matter whose idea it was. It reflects on all of us,
right? We both have been around questionable things in radio where someone goes, hey, let's do this. And like, no, that's probably not a good idea.
Yeah.
And then there are other times that people don't ask anyone. They just do it. And it definitely was a bad idea.
Yeah.
Listen. In this case, it's a PS5. You got to know what that's going to do. If you give it to a kid and then take it away.
This is one of those things. And listen, it's no secret to anybody who's listened to the station for more than a few years.
A person who does not like kids would not do that.
First off, I don't dislike kids. Second off, even if I did hate kids, I still wouldn't do that.
You who dislikes non-related kids.
No, I like kids. I just also like that when kids are annoying, to be in a place that I can go, bye-bye. Because all your kids are annoying at some point, all right? That all your kids are annoying. I was watching an interview yesterday with a friend of the show, R-Truth, and Roman Reigns. And like it gets quiet for like a second. Roman's like, you hear that? R-Truth's like, no, what is it? And he goes, that's a baby crying. Babies never stop crying. They're hell on earth. They're annoying. I was like, I feel you, Roman Reigns. I get you, dog. Even the OTC understands. It's annoying sometimes.
Yeah, but you don't get that.
All I've ever wanted is for adult places to not have kids in them. All I've ever wanted is for you not to bring your kid to a bar where I'm trying to knock back rum and Sprite. That's all I'm asking. Is that too much to ask?
So you, noted non-hater of kids, wouldn't take that PS5 away and then walk away laughing?
No, no. Walk away laughing. The audacity.
Okay.
I wouldn't do that if I was asked to dress up and play the Grinch in a play that happened. I'd be like, that's not good. Right. Not a good look. But jokes aside, the point here is a lot of teams, I think, fail or don't connect because there's two things we expect out of our teams. Number one, we expect success. And number two, we expect our team to be a good representation of us. When I put on whatever I put on, I'm wearing my Pensacola Ice Flyers jersey from back when I used to work for that team 100 years ago. When I put on this jersey, I put on this jersey not just because I was a fan of the Ice Flyers for a long time, but I put on this jersey because I want to be able to walk around and have people see that and connect me to Pensacola and be proud of that. Right? Be proud of that. If the most publicity that the Charlotte Hornets have received in a number of weeks is that they gave a kid a PlayStation 5 and then in an absolute twist went, nah, no Fortnite for you, you little loser. No Marvel Rivals for you, you little dork. That's a real bad look. Like, are you proud to rep the franchise when that is the not just the publicity they're getting, but the most publicity that they have gotten for some time? I'm going to say the answer for most of us because we're not terrible people is no. But I don't know. Maybe it's just me. All right, let's take a break. When we come back here in just a minute right now, 88-91, the South Carolina Gamecocks win an OT thriller over the Clemson Tigers last night. South Carolina has played three top 25 teams this year. Clemson is the first one they have defeated. Let's talk about this game and how the Gamecocks were able to get onto the right side of a Q1 win when we come back on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show back on your radio. You got to wait for the beat drop, right? Like, you got to wait for the beat drop. It's just the rule. It's the rules of radio. I didn't make them.
I don't know why you had to nod your head when you did it, but I mean, you know.
Because I was like, ready to go.
Okay.
And then you had to stick that landing, man. Stick that landing. So, South Carolina Gamecocks knock off Clemson in basketball last night, 91-88 in an overtime matchup. When it was all said and done, the Gamecocks shot almost 52% from the floor, 41.2% from range last night. Clemson shot 47% from the floor, 43% from down the arc. There was one significant difference here, and that is free throws. South Carolina attempted 34 free throws. They knocked down 24 of them. Clemson shot 21 free throws. They, however, did knock down 19 of 21. That's a pretty good clip. Now, you do have to keep in mind, obviously, that a lot of those free throws were coming towards the end of the second half when Clemson was trying to force the overtime issue. A lot of them came in the final few seconds of the overtime period, with Clemson trying to force a second overtime when it was all said and done. There was a lot to take in here. I will start with this. Yeah, it sucks losing to a rival. We know that. But I would say to Clemson fans, calm down. Like, this is not a loss that haunts you. This is not a loss that sticks with you. This is not a loss that is going to cost you a tournament spot at the end of the year. And I'll tell you why. The 8-3 Gamecocks are going to be ranked probably this week. They will probably, I think, spend the majority of the season hanging out around like 20 to 30 in the rankings. It's probably, honestly, going to be considered, when it's all said and done, a quad two win. Now, you were playing on the road. You were playing in their house. It was actually surprisingly full last night for being a winter break game. Doesn't surprise me. You had Dawn Staley in the house. You had Shane Beamer in the house. You had the new AD in the house. Like, everybody who was everybody in Columbia, South Carolina was there. But as far as the game itself goes, there's a couple of things I think you've got to be very, very careful of. Like, very, very careful of. I think you've got to be very careful of losing composure. Because I really do felt like that's ultimately what did Clemson in last night. I felt like there were a couple of spots where South Carolina went on a run and Clemson lost composure. Now, they kept coming back to it. They kept finding it. And I know this is one of those intangible things in sports that I say I don't like to talk about because, you know, it's impossible to measure composure, right? It's kind of like Tipper Gore described pornography. I don't know how to define it, but I know it when I see it. And the line between pornography and art is usually razor thin. But when it comes to this basketball game last night, it was very easy to see the moments in time where Clemson was able to shift the mentality one direction or the next. South Carolina came out and I think went on like a 10-2 run to open this game. And they were pretty much getting whatever they wanted from Nick Pringle down low. It was just kick him the rock down low. By the way, 7 of 8 from the floor, 4 of 7 from the stripe, 18 points for the big man down low. Not something I'm concerned about. Nick Pringle is a good player. He's not a big, I don't want to say not strong, he's a strong player, but he's not like a big, thick, traditional five that I think gives you problems, because that is something that Clemson is going to have to contend with down the line. Big, strong inside fives. Because you got some dudes that can go down there. I'm interested in seeing the continued development of Victor Lackin. 6'11", 245. Doesn't look like he plays 245, though, right? Like, Pringle was kind of pushing him around a little bit. There is a weakness, I think, to Clemson's game, and I do think it's going to be when you come up against a power inside basketball team. South Carolina is not a power inside basketball team. Now, they're going to give it to Nick Pringle. They're going to try to get him 10 field goal efforts a game. But he's not a big, strong guy. I think what ended up killing Clemson was that ultimately it was South Carolina who was dictating the floor spacing last night. It was South Carolina that was saying, we are going to play this way. These are the places we're going to focus the basketball, and you've got to stop us. And Clemson just didn't last night. That's a problem when you come up against tournament teams, because that is what good tournament teams do. They say, we are going to dictate the ball. We are going to dictate where you are playing offensively. We are going to dictate where we are playing defensively, and you are going to answer to that. And I felt like last night it got to a point where, at least it's spots in the game, it felt like there were spots in the game where Clemson just did not know how to respond to that. Texas said, Rob, South Carolina plays bully ball defense. Clemson was getting frustrated. Yeah, I think that's exactly what I'm saying. South Carolina was pushing the issue last night. And outside of a couple of guys, listen, there were a couple of spots last night that in Shefflin looked like real good. He was like, okay, why is that not the play? But then South Carolina would start to collapse around Shefflin underneath, and nobody else took advantage of that, in my opinion, right? Nobody else took advantage of that. Nobody else stepped into that spot. When South Carolina started saying, all right, if you are going to push the issue with Ian Shiflett, who was doing a great job, by the way, garbage points, rebounds. He had 12 boards last night. 12 boards last night. The rest of the team combined had 6, 12, 15. said the rest of the team combined had three more boards than Shefflin. He's a dangerous player, man. He sees the ball coming off the rim. He gets there and he puts it back. But when South Carolina started collapsing around Shefflin, it's like Clemson didn't really need or didn't really know what they were going to do after that. Once they started trying to take Ian Shefflin out of the mix, especially late in the game when Shefflin was in foul trouble, when they started to collapse around him, it's like the rest of the Clemson offense kind of didn't really know where to go or what to do after that, which is 100% the opposite of what this team did last year when they made an Elite Eight run last year. Last year, when they were making their Elite Eight run, you had a lot of spots where the Ian Shefflins of the world were getting isolated by bully ball defenses, and Clemson was going, all right, then we'll kick it over here. We'll extend to this corner. We'll start pressing the issue on dribble drive penetration and make you come out of that shell. And last night, it didn't feel like that was on the radar for the Clemson Tigers. On the flip side, for South Carolina, the one issue I had with this team last night was you'd go on a 10-2 run, and then you get away from whatever it was that created that run. It's like the second it didn't work out. Early in the game, it was get the ball inside to Nick Pringle. He had the first 5 points of the game. It's like as soon as they figured out that this thing was working and Clemson made any defensive adaptations to that, South Carolina started getting away from it a little bit. They started going in a different direction. And I genuinely didn't understand why would you go through this offensive set that was working so well for you? Why would you go through this offensive set where you're getting the ball down low, you're putting the ball on the blocks, you're letting Pringle go to work? If they collapse on Pringle, there's Murray Boyles. If they collapse on Pringle, there's Studi, who, by the way, lit the net on fire in the second half of the first half. It got to a point where, unlike Clemson, who kind of kept forcing the one issue because it seemed like the only thing that they were comfortable doing, it's like as soon as Clemson started pressing the issue, South Carolina abandoned the thing that was working for them. And the thing that was working wasn't just get the ball into Nick Pringle and let him go to town, which he was early. It's get the ball inside to Pringle, let him demand that the Clemson defense collapse around him, and then find the guy outside. You went from playing really strong inside-out basketball to going on these runs where you started playing outside-in basketball, and it was just a weird philosophy shift that I didn't understand in the moment. Like, I really didn't. At one point, they showed Dawn Staley on the sideline holding the Palmetto Bowl trophy, and I thought she was going to have an aneurysm, and I assume it's because she saw the same thing that I saw. Good win for South Carolina. That's going to be one that boosts the resume when we get to tournament time. By the way, how about the daggum SEC in basketball, dude? Joe Lunardi's most recent bracketology has 14 SEC teams in the tournament. 14 teams in the tournament, and I think there's two more. I think the other two are bubble teams. Like, it's wild. All right, back after this on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. I want to be a defender of the NBA. I really do. But I made the realization last night as I watched the NBA Cup Finals. I made the realization last night that even as somebody who wants to be a defender of the National Basketball Association, it's kind of hard to do right now, right? Like, it's got the best basketball players in the world, no doubt about it. Best basketball teams in the world, no doubt about it. But there is something about the league right now. Now, again, and I do think it is important to point out, the NBA is signing gigantic television contracts right now, right? Like, I think it's unreasonable, even with audience viewership down, at the end of the day, the goal is to secure big checks, and they're doing that. Like, TV networks still see value in the product. But I think there are things that need to get fixed. Now, I complained earlier this week about one of my big things that I have an issue with is the fact that the volume of three-pointers being shot is, frankly, unnecessary. It feels like most games don't have teams putting up 48 three-pointers because they've got a Steph Curry and I can justify it. It feels like most teams are putting up 43 three-pointers because there's no offensive drive. There's no offensive, like, you know, with you even go back and again, I hate to be the guy who sounds so much like an old hat that it makes the conversation irrelevant. But if you go back and you look at even the Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, Boston Celtics super team. Certainly, if you go back and you look at Mike and you look at Kobe and you look at young LeBron, like early Cleveland LeBron, you can see that offenses were run with a goal in mind. I've used the phrase a number of times this week. I think that there is an American attitude that is bad for sports. And I think that American attitude is we care about the result of the play, not the play, right? We care about the flash and the sizzle, but not the substance. We care about the presentation on the plate, not how it's cooked and prepared. And I think that that's a problem for sports. I really do. Because at the end of the day, the number one rule is give the people what they want. That's how television works. Give the people what they want. And so when I tune in to Sports Center in the morning before I come to work, and I'm getting dressed in the bro cave, and I'm pulling on the jersey and the jeans, and I got SC running in the background, and they go, all right, let's take a look at last night's contest between the Hawks and the Mavericks. And I'm like, oh, okay. Trey and Luka, this ought to be interesting. I bet this was a smoker of a contest. And I tune it on. What do they play me? They play me the dunks, they play me the threes, and not much else, right? Because we have gotten to the point where we appreciate the highlights, not the play. We appreciate the results, not the play. That attitude, I think, at some point, begins to impact the game itself. I think it starts to impact the game itself because as young kids come into the league, and they do, I keep having to remind myself that the kids that are joining up in the NBA this year for their rookie year, I'm old enough to be their dad in like a normal sense, not like a I got started early in high school because the cheerleaders liked me kind of sense. I genuinely could have had a normal traditional American relationship and had a child who was old enough to be going into the league right now. And I think sometimes we have lofty expectations of kids, especially successful kids. I saw something the other day that parents of gifted kids, smart kids, you know, AP kids, smart kids, parents of gifted kids are actually considered less efficient parents. Why? Not because of anything that they are doing wrong, but because their kid is so smart, they sometimes forget that they're a kid. And so they don't teach them the life lessons, right? They don't teach them the life lessons because this kid's so smart. He obviously gets it. And that's not really, it's not how it works. At the end of the day, they're still kids. I think we look at kids who are making, you know, $22 million a year playing NFL football or $17 million a year as a rookie playing NBA basketball or whatever. And we have a tendency to want to act as if they are straight up adults. When most of these kids, and I've told you the story before, of the D1 player I played with back in high school. Nobody ever told this kid no. Nobody ever said anything bad to this kid. So when he got to the NFL and was drafted to a team, and he got put on the practice squad up front, and a head coach came and said, hey, I want you to run this route across the middle. And he said, no. He said, what do you mean, no? The kid said, I don't run across the middle. I've never run across the middle. and the head coach of an NFL franchise team who was trying to give him money to keep playing the game he's played his whole life, said, now you do. And he said, no, I don't. Now, my sneaky suspicion about why he said, no, I don't, is very simple. Because nobody had ever told him, yeah, you do, before. They had always run an offense to protect this kid, which resulted in him as a wide receiver never going across the middle. Nobody had asked him to. Nobody told him he was going to. So he goes to the NFL, and the very first coach he gets says, you're going across the middle, and a kid who has been not ever told, yeah, you are, bud. And if you don't want to go across the middle, you don't play here, was told, if you don't go across the middle, you don't play here. So I think we set these high and lofty expectation of the cheering, of the kids, when they make their way into the league. And I think that that impacts them from a young age, to get back to where I was driving with this conversation. Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, said yesterday that he is going to begin investigating the higher than ever before volume of three-point shots across the NBA. He said, quote, the answer is we are having many discussions about the style of basketball being played. I would not reduce it to a so-called three-point shooting issue. I think we look more holistically at the skill level on the floor, the diversity of offense, the fan reception to the game, all of the above. I think the game is in a great place. I love watching the games. I think we have some of the most skilled athletes in the world competing, and it's unfair, I think, to the players to lump them into categories as three-point shooters or mid-range shooters or big men playing under the basket. It's an amazing game. Having said that, we're constantly having discussions about whether there are ways to improve stylistically the game on the floor. Look, I don't know what the solution is for Adam Silver. I've seen a couple of people that have suggested moving the three-point line back. I don't really think that's a problem. Steph is hitting timeline threes consistently. I got guys like Victor Wembanyama who are hitting from 2 or 3 feet behind the arc. I don't think moving the three-point line is anything. To be honest with you, I don't know if there is a solution that can be grown by a suit and tie. I do think there is one solution. I don't know if it can be enacted, but I think there is one solution. And I think that one solution is go find you a team somewhere, build a team that knows how to play basketball. Go build a team that knows how to win when another team is shooting 48-plus three-pointers per game. Go put a team together the way that teams used to be organized. Now, again, I don't know that this can happen in today's NBA, with free agency, with salary and luxury taxes. I don't know that this can be done. And on top of that, I don't know if the players are still being produced. I told the wife the other day, I think I'm getting close to wanting to go back and coach youth basketball. And part of the reason why is because I think, not an organization like, but a lot of coaches in the AAU world are preaching that mentality. Hey, get the ball to John over there. John, you're our best player. Make something happen, and if nothing happens, jack up a three. As opposed to, let's use all five players on the court to come up with some sort of strategy that we know is going to work. Using all five guys on the court, using the spacing on the court, to come up with something that gets the ball to Jeff but does so with a higher percentage shot, then I'm guarded, I dribble drive penetrated, nothing was there, so I'm going to jack up a three. Because that's where I think we are. The reality about where the NBA is right now, the reality about where the NBA is that it starts with low-level youth basketball. And the more that the NBA continues to morph into this game that is a three-point shooting game and also Victor Wembanyama scores sometimes, right? The more it morphs there, the more the next generation of kids starts to look at, watch, view, take that in, absorb that, and believe that's what basketball is. And it's not. And it's not. So I don't know that there's anything Adam Silver can do to fix a portion of the game that has indeed not just made the game boring, but has driven audiences away from it, short of invest in teaching the next generation what basketball looks like. Ooh, 2-1.
My excuse is that I'm dying over here. All right, time for what the X. First thing that's X-ing is Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I don't know why Stone Cold Steve Austin is trending. I do know somebody earlier on one of the websites that I scanned through for sports stories asked the question, why in kayfabe is Kevin Owens not fired for what he's been doing? And my response was, if you fired Kevin Owens for what he's doing, you'd have had to put Stone Cold Steve Austin in front of a firing squad for what he used to do.
Especially after the bedpan. It's his birthday.
It's his birthday. Stone Cold is 54. 58. 60? He's 60?
He's 60 years old. Oh. That one hurt you, I guess. If you keep in mind, he had been wrestling for a while before he hit, so it wasn't like he was 22.
When Hollywood Blondes, baby!
Yeah, I mean, so he had been around a while, so him being 60, excuse me, not that big of a surprise. The next thing that's X-ing is Steve Harvey.
I'm going to tell you, I'm not a big Steve Harvey guy. Don't tell anybody. I'll get in trouble for that. I think we're required nowadays to like Steve Harvey. I'm not a big Steve Harvey guy. Steve Harvey's X-ing because it's also his birthday, and he is 60.
By the way, I love Kenan Thompson's version of Steve Harvey.
That is
more
fair.
More than Steve Harvey.
That is fair.
I guess a bunch of people got messages this morning that Steve Harvey had died.
Oh, so he was the most recent celebrity that social media killed.
Yeah, and he's like, he's on social media saying, no, I am not dead.
I mean, that's what a dead guy would say.
Absolutely, or their people.
Yeah.
You know, especially as they're trying to get all
their
money.
That's what I'd say if I was trying to cover up Steve Harvey dying.
But he did not die. So apparently, I didn't realize that was a thing now. And I didn't see the Denzel anywhere, so I was a little worried. Because
Denzel's been killed a couple of times by social media.
No, I mean, when someone dies, you get the Denzel meme or whatever going.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's holding his heart and going, you know, like we're good. But did not see that. All right, the next thing that is X-ing is Skibidi Told It.
I don't know what is sadder.
Did I say it right?
Yes.
That's my first attempt ever. This is the first time I ever saw this. Didn't know what it was till now. I think I know what it is now.
Okay. There's a lot of different things. Number one, it's a dumb phrase that the youth say. But again, I can't judge what the youth say because every youth makes up their own words that catch on and become part of the lexicon. This is just the dumbest of all of them forever. But the reason it is trending, I think, is because they have added into the Fortnite game, which is, you know, it's the big game amongst the cheering out there. They have added a celebration that actually involves characters going into and coming out of a toilet as their emote. Although I did have to laugh last night because apparently one of the characters you can play in Fortnite now is Godzilla. And so there's a picture of a Godzilla bobbing up and down in a Skibidi toilet.
Okay.
I swore for years I was never going to say those words.
Yeah, well, I just said it just because it is X-ing. All right, the next thing that's X-ing is Mike Vrabel.
So this is real fun. Yesterday, I think it was Orlovsky, though I could be wrong. Somebody said that Vrabel is already lined up for a next job. He's already got it. It's already done. The writing's on the wall. It's just a matter of got to let the season finish out. And they were pushing for, it was on McAfee's show. And McAfee was like, is it Ohio State? And he's like, why would you assume it's college? McAfee was like, it's definitely college then. So there is a growing set of believers out there, a great one, that if Ryan Day loses this game to Tennessee, Mike Vrabel will be the Buckeyes head coach next year.
All right, we've mentioned that before, but the reason why it's X-ing now is supposedly he's taking either the Bears job or Miami's job or any job that's available in New England also, which kind of makes the most sense if he was, but anyway, so any job where there's a bad coach or a coach about to be gone, Mike Vrabel is supposedly going to take that job.
For sure. And I think the best thing going for Mike Vrabel right now is the fact that Texans suck booty.
And mostly Chicago fans are apologizing. Chicago. That was a different one.
Tennessee fans. Yeah, they should be.
Justin Fields is also trending or Xing, and the Chicago fans are apologizing.
I will say this. I don't think Vrabel's the right guy for Tennessee. I think you got to go get an offensive guy for Tennessee.
Well, he's not going to be back at Tennessee.
Chicago.
Yeah.
I think you got to go get an offensive guy. You got to give Caleb Williams a shot. You got to find the Dave Canales.
Do you?
To Caleb Williams, starting quarterback. Yes, you do.
You would have won more if Justin Fields would stay there.
No.
Yeah, you
would've. That team sucks.
Yeah.
Bad.
You would have.
Bad. Hey, we're going to yell more tomorrow. Be here.
I hope not. That may be why I feel ill.
We're gonna verbally lash out at each other once again. Y'all have a great rest of your day. Do not drink and drive. I'll punch you in the face. Come back tomorrow. We'll do it all over again, but better on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate later.